Hi, everyone. It's Kevin. Today is Tuesday, November 24th, my daughter's 23rd birthday. Today I have Docs Furley and Andrews on the podcast with me to talk about COVID. And while it's challenging to talk numbers since everything regarding COVID is changing so fast, the AP is reporting that the U.S. is now averaging more than 1,500 new deaths per day, according to data from Johns Hopkins. The seven-day rolling average for deaths was less than 1,000 just 2 weeks ago and is now 1,510. So there have been close to 1.4 million confirmed deaths globally, and the U.S. has seen the most by far, almost 257,000. These are sobering statistics. Given that, Doc Andrews, let's start by talking about the state of COVID-19.
Thank you. So the state of COVID, well, it is worse now than it was in the spring. The rate of cases is increasing, and it's increasing exponentially. For the latest statistics, as you've already said, people should check the Johns Hopkins website. And for the number of cases at EB, people can refer to the EB landing. The curve is going up sharply, and the worst part is that Thanksgiving is this week, and then with Christmas following in 1 month's time. It is up to all of us to remain vigilant, to stay healthy, or to avoid further spreading of COVID. The interesting thing is the information on COVID does come fast and furious from all different sources. We can get it from the CDC, we can get it from Rhode Island or Connecticut Department of Public Health, Twitter, Facebook, or sometimes we even get our information from the guy standing at the water cooler. We get the news nowadays, we get it on the radio, we get it from TVs, computers, phones, and some of us that are old-timers actually even look at print news. The sources of information that we get this news from, some of it's good news and is reliable, some of it's bad, and some of this information is somewhere in between, and it's actually very hard to differentiate what's fact or not fact. Unfortunately, some of the information can even be contradictory to other information that we're getting. And some of the facts that are now even have become political in nature, which is just another added layer. Everyone then synthesizes all of these sources and all the information, and we all make our own interpretations of what the information says. We all make our own opinions based on this information, and that's the assortment of facts and opinions. And then the interesting part is that we can all legitimize or rationalize our own actions. And if you look hard and deep enough, there's enough information out there that I think any one of us can validate our own opinions. We are definitely a statistics kind of place, and while the stats are telling, I also want to just touch upon a term that I've used in the past, which is COVID fatigue. I know I've definitely used that term on these podcasts before, but I think at this point, it's way more than just COVID fatigue. And I just want to take a second to mention that because I think it is part of the state of COVID. COVID fatigue, it's really become now, it's anger, sadness, loneliness, anxiousness, and madness. And I want to say that these are real emotions. And some of us can have any one of these emotions on any given day. You don't just have to have one or another. And those emotions go with any other emotions I didn't even think to add to the list. Sometimes these emotions can even get the best of us. And when that happens, I just want to remind people that we have the employee assistance programs. And if anyone feels that their emotions are kind of out of control or they just need help, that they should by all means contact the employee assistance program. I do want to end on a little bit of good news. And the good news is that people are surviving COVID more now than they did in the spring. We all are hoping that there's going to be an effective and safe vaccine, which is really, you know, coming on the horizon, coming quickly. So there is still good news, and we still have to live our days with all these mixed emotions. But remember that there is still good things out there.
Well, thanks, Doc. I appreciate the perspective you're providing on emotional health and well-being of everybody going through this global pandemic. And I know in my own family's case, my daughter's out on the West Coast, out in California. And so we've been separated now for just about a year. And a lot of that because of the travel restrictions. So what we're finding is that it's very helpful when we talk pretty much every day with each other just to check in and see how we're doing. And so I think that's important that we continue to do that with our family and friends. Just try and do as best we can with regard to that, that touch time we get with folks to make sure that they're all doing okay. Doc Curley, let's talk a little bit more about a lot what's in the news, and that's really about the vaccine. So we seem to be hearing something every day. Most of it seems to be pretty positive, high efficacy rates and options from a couple of different companies. So I'd like you to break that down for us. What's the status as of today, and give us a sense for what you think will happen when the vaccines deploy?
Yes, good morning. So Pfizer, Moderna, and now Oxford University has reported that their COVID-19 vaccines are up to 90% effective. They are not alone. There are at least 54 COVID-19 vaccines in development, six of which have received funding under the U.S. government's Operation Warp Speed. While none of these are available in the United States, several potential vaccines have been shown to be effective against the coronavirus. Pfizer and its partner, the German biotechnology firm BioNTech, have reported that their synthetic messenger RNA vaccine is 90% effective at protecting participants in their phase 3 clinical trials. One drawback is that the vaccine needs to be kept at below freezing temperatures. That makes it hard to transport and store. It would have to be administered soon after it's taken from storage, or it loses its potency. It's anticipated that the cost of two doses per person will be around $39. Moderna and the National Institutes of Health use a similar messenger RNA technology and announced the vaccine to be 94.5% effective in an interim analysis of late-stage clinical trials. It's easier to store. It remains effective up to 1 month in a standard refrigerator. If you freeze the vaccine, it will last a little bit longer. Its anticipated cost is between $50 and $75 per person for two doses. Finally, the British-Swedish company AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford have announced interim results from their 24,000-person phase 3 trial. It found the vaccine was 70% effective when the data from two different dosing regimens was combined. When given a half dose, followed by a full dose, 90% of individuals developed antibodies. The 90% rate was interesting, that actually less was more. When given two full doses, the efficacy rate was only 62%. Combined, 70% is still an efficacious vaccine and is promising. But like all the others, we'll have to wait for the studies to be peer reviewed before we decide on which one to choose. Another reason to look at the Oxford vaccine is that it's purported to reduce asymptomatic transmission. This means the vaccine not only helps stop people getting sick, but also helps to cut transmission rates of the virus. The Oxford product differs from Moderna and Pfizer in that it's an adenovirus. It relies on a weaker version of a virus that causes the common cold in chimpanzees that has been tweaked so it cannot grow in humans. Adenovirus vaccines are easier to store and transport. That's why, unlike Pfizer, BioNTech, or Moderna's vaccines, which require very cold storage, the Oxford vaccine can be stored at fridge temperature. At present, the specific rollout of these vaccines is changing rapidly. Yesterday at 3 p.m., Pfizer announced that they were requesting FDA emergency use authorization for their vaccine. Their CEO announced that the vaccine would be distributed within hours of getting this FDA-EUA approval. He believes the company can deliver 50 million doses by January and 1.3 billion by the end of the year. We are awaiting Moderna's request for FDA approval. Will these three be the only ones we'll be able to choose from? It's too early to say at this point, but certainly Pfizer and Moderna have a leg up in the United States. We might not see the Oxford vaccine initially, as they have agreements in place to supply both the UK and Australia. That having been said, they are also readying 3 billion doses of that vaccine. If Pfizer's is approved, rollout will start before Christmas, and the bulk of the vaccinations will occur from January to the end of the year in the United States. Oxford's vaccine is planning a rollout in the UK to start around Christmas. The UK health minister stated that the country would be, quote, back to normal, end quote, by Easter. Certainly all of this is welcomed and encouraging news, and it's just another reason you staying safe until the vaccines are here.
Thanks, Dr. Hurley. I appreciate the insight, and I learned a lot about the similarities and differences between these vaccines that we've been hearing so much about in the news. So the efficacy rates are certainly encouraging, and I hope the UK health minister is right. I know a lot of people listening would agree with that we can look forward to getting back to normal this spring. In the meantime, until the vaccines are available, we need to do whatever we can to stop the transmission. So Doc Andrews, in concert with our state and local leaders, we've been asking people to limit who and where they spend their holidays. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so I would like to start with, the holidays are notoriously hard on people. There's added expectations, added responsibilities, and that's just from kind of what we're going to call a normal holiday season. Add COVID to the mix, and we have something I can't even begin to describe. What I would say is it's all up to us to control our behaviors. Each of us must limit our social interactions. There's no other way to put it. We have to put some limits on ourselves. I did want to take a moment to discuss an area that is still, I think, a little confusing to people because it deals with directly with people interacting with others. So I try to make an analogy. And if you're exposed to people, if you're exposed to COVID, then you can develop the disease sometime over the next 14 days. That's what we're calling the incubation period. People often get tested during this incubation period, particularly if they had a known exposure. This is the important part. A negative test only tells you that you do not have virus at that point in time. So here's where the analogy. So bear with me. I'm going to try to give you an analogy. So if you drive over a nail with your car, and then you get out of the car, you check your tire, the tire looks fine. This would be similar to being exposed to COVID, then having a negative test result. However, if you then drive around with the nail in your tire for a week or so, the tire may begin to lose air. So after a week or so, if you recheck your tire, the tire might be flat. This would be equivalent to converting to a positive test later in the incubation period. So I want to remind everyone that testing is important to find positive cases so that we can pull those positives kind of out of circulation. However, a negative test does not give us permission to behave recklessly. So please stay within your group that you have already created. Continue to wear your face masks, maintain your social distancing. I even thought of some ways that we could kind of enhance the social distancing. So open windows, be outside. I mean, I know you've heard those from other places, but even at Thanksgiving, start opening the windows, particularly if it's a warm day. Continue to wash your hands, continue to wash surfaces. Again, maybe something as simple as switching to paper products may decrease how many dirty dishes one person has to touch. So we all will or have made sacrifices so far. Some of the sacrifices have been big, while others have been small or more mundane. Yet, as bad as the sacrifices may be, we all want to remain hopeful and optimistic. So even with COVID, everyone can find something to be thankful for. So let's remember that during the holidays, there's something out there to be thankful for, and I want to wish everyone a safe and healthy holiday.
Thanks, Doc, and I appreciate both you, Doc Hurley, Doc Andrews, for taking the time to speak with us today before the holiday break. So as a reminder, if you have any questions about our COVID procedures and policies, you can find what you need on our COVID-19 update page on the home port. And you can also reach out to your HR business partner. I want to say thanks to all of you for listening. Have a safe, healthy, and restful Thanksgiving, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks.